iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
The Pacifica National Board and the WPFW Local Station Board will be voting on a proposed Pacifica Bylaws Amendment between July 10th and August 24th of 2024. Information on the amendment, about how vacancies are filled on local station boards, and about the process will be posted on the Pacifica.org website.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What?
Come on. Get that.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every first Tuesday for a two-hour special live from the world-famous historic Ben's Chili Bowl. And we're here now, and would you believe there's two camera crews, people coming in from all over the world, from Germany, the Netherlands, and they're filming. So we're doing our show in the back room of the Chili Bowl, because during the day, there's two more broadcasts that'll be happening live from the historic Ben's Chili Bowl. And we want to say thank you for tuning in to Crossroads, and for all of the folk who've been listening to us, who write us emails, text us, and make phone calls. Thank you. We appreciate it. We've been on the air for 16 years. Would you believe that? And we've been dealing with the criminal justice aspect of society. So Crossroads is your show. We're only here to host it. So we'll start off as usual. Before I get to the grapevine, I got a couple of calls about why we always open up with Richard Pryor in our opening monologue. Richard Pryor came down to Lawton when I was in Lawton serving a life sentence. He came in to Lawton, and when he walked into the gymnasium and he saw nothing but brothers, Richard started crying. One of the guys asked him for his shirt, and he took off his shirt and gave it to the guy, stood up on the stage and cried, and they made a song, sung a song for Richard, said that, "You made me feel brand new." And Richard cried again, and he went to the warden and took us out of Lawton, the Inner Voices, and we went to the Apollo Theater in New York City with Calvin Lockhart, Richard Pryor, and a few others, and we went across the country. Richard was one of the guys that got us out of prison on a national tour to perform around the country. So Richard is a good friend of ours, and we always play his as a reminder of how we are filling up these jails and institutions across America. Now we go with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Hey, the Supreme Court ruled that it's okay to criminalize sleeping while homeless. Sleep is a biological necessity, not a crime, Justice Sonia Sotomayor said in her dissent. Sleep is a biological necessity, not a crime. And the Supreme Court just ruled on Friday, the conservative supermajority ruled that states that criminalize the homeless for sleeping outside are not inflicting cruel and unusual punishment in violation of the Eighth Amendment. The court's liberal justices sharply dissented, basically on the grounds of where else are they supposed to go? Where do they go to sleep when you don't have nowhere to go? And they're going to lock you up and charge you a fine and criminalize you. And you don't have no money to even pay to buy something to eat. Boy, the Supreme Court is off the chain. BOP ordered to transfer a prisoner home after first step miscalculation. The Federal Bureau of Prisons is still trying to implement the First Step Act. Over 5 years after the legislation was signed into law by then President Trump, while the calculations of FSA, the First Step Act, credits to reduce a prison term for federal prisoners, has mostly been fixed. A lack of space to put the prisoners at halfway houses is now causing extreme problems The result is that many, potentially thousands of prisoners are staying inside institutions longer than necessary, awaiting bed space at halfway houses. And in Washington, D.C., we don't have our own halfway house for our men to return to. So many women are being overly incarcerated for longer periods of time due to the bureaucracy and the jiggy boogie in D.C. and other cities and not providing housing. Diversion, a hidden key to combating racial and ethnic disparities in juvenile justice. Diverting youth from juvenile court involvement should be a central focus in efforts to reduce racial and ethnic disparities and improve outcomes in our nation's youth. Black disparities in youth incarcerations. Black youth are more than four times as likely to be detained or committed in juvenile facilities as their white counterparts. Mississippi wants to allow some votes from jails and prisons. Red tape may stop it. A new state law would allow more people in jails and prisons to cast absentee ballots, but many obstacles remain in their path. A new Mississippi law clarifies that some people held in jail or prisons may vote in elections, but widespread confusion and the tangle of paperwork will likely continue to block many of them from casting ballots. The state permanently disenfranchises people convicted of crimes that fall into 22 broad criminal categories. However, people convicted of any other crimes remain eligible to vote, but among those incarcerated people who have not had their voting rights legally taken away, they suggested several years ago that state law allow only those who happen to be incarcerated outside their county residence to cast an absentee ballot. And that, folks, has been what we call the grapevine. Information that you can use. Now we're going to turn to our show. And this is a show that I've been waiting for, because this guy here is a good friend of mine. And somebody said he looks like me. And they're going to put him on television with me. Our show this morning is COVID-19 is on the rise. And it's society and prisoners ready for it. And our good friend, Dr. Reed Tuxton, a gentleman that we've been knowing for some time, and he used to be he's a graduate of Howard University and Georgetown University School of Medicine, the Hospital of University of Pennsylvania. He also worked with our good friend, Dr. Marion Barry. He was a commissioner of public health on the Marion Barry. And Dr. Tuxton has been involved with the corporate community, the religious community, all over the country, doing whatever he can to advance the cause of public health. And I want to say thank you. And you do look like me a little bit, Doc.
I'm honored, brother. I got a trade up. I like that. I got more money in my pocket than when I started.
Thank you. And this morning, our topic is COVID-19 is on the rise in society and the prisons. And when the COVID first hit, the first person we called 2 years ago was Dr. Reed Tuxton, who was on top of it. He started his own Blacks Against COVID-19. He's been all around the country and out of the country advocating on behalf of those who might be subjected to catching this COVID-19. Good morning, Dr. Reed Tuxton.
Thank you. Thank you, my brother. Good to see you. Good to see Martine and Nikichi. I'm glad to see everybody there. And by the way, I think it's important that we really, really, really come back to the way you started the show. And that is this sense of overwhelming humanity and love for our people. You know, Stokely Carmichael used to teach us, all the time, an undying love for Black people. And yeah, what you should know is that, this last time we experienced the pandemic, a year and a half ago, that we, despite as a Black community, despite how far, we had to run from the back of the pack, we saved Black lives in an incredible way. We saved more Black lives proportionally than white people saved white lives in the last pandemic. And that was because of people like you fighting for what happens with our incarcerated community and also the returnees and their families. Thanks God for the churches and the civic associations and all of them. But the main thing is we have never had an experience in America with health where Black folks have exceeded something in terms of survival than white folks. And that was because all of us, despite all the naysayers and all the people that said that the vaccine was going to give you a third eye and a fourth leg, you know. I mean, you know all the stuff that came on the airways, man. We heard more stuff. None of that. Not only did none of that happen, but we had enough Black folks that protected themselves that at least we survived better than white folks. So that's what I just want to start out with, this sense of, if Richard Pryor was crying when he saw all those Black men, we have to keep that kind of emotional sensitivity that says that every one of those lives matter, and the families that those men come from, they matter. Black folks, we matter.
You know, Doc, the question is, we've been hearing that COVID is back and is on the rise, and I still see people walking around with masks. What's the status? Is COVID-19 on the rise? Is it increasing or what?
So what we should remember is that, you know, we're used to things like the flu, where there's a flu season. It kind of comes and it goes. And so you can kind of predict with flu when it's here and when it's gone. With COVID, this virus has been very good at continuously changing, mutating, altering its form. And so it has not ever gone away like the flu season goes away. So it has been with us. It is on the uptick. And the reason it is on the uptick, in at least 40 states now are seeing an increase in what we expect to be a summer wave. And the reason is that because people are more indoors because of the heat and because of the nature of heat and humidity. But the fact that we're all kind of gathered together again indoors because of the heat waves, we're probably in much more proximity to each other. And then again, these new variants are making it easier to catch it. So it is on the upcrease. The good news, though, Roach, and I'm sure your next question would be, is the new variant and the new increase more severe than the past? So far, while we do see more hospitalizations on the rise in the last couple of weeks and month, we don't see this as being more serious in terms of the disease that it creates. It makes people sick, no question about it, but not in the level of the death rates that we were seeing in the past. Now, the only other thing I'll quickly say, though, Roach, is that that's for the average person. But those people who are very old, the elderly, those who have immunocompromising conditions, things where our bodies are not able, either because of the medications we're taking or the disease we have, who can't fight off infections as easily, those folks are in danger, and we'll have to be very careful with them.
You know, you just said something that's very crucial. The majority of prisoners over 55 years old, who are incarcerated, we got a growing elderly population in corrections. And we talked about this when you was on previously, Doc, that there's no preparation or equipment or medical supplies for those men and women incarcerated. We talked about the men and women who are using their underwear and T-shirts and socks, washing them on to put them on their faces as masks because they didn't have sufficient masks to give everybody inside of prison. And we had several thousand men and women die in prison during the advent of the beginning of COVID-19, and we are afraid that the same thing will happen again, even though we got a majority elderly population incarcerated with poor, inadequate medical assistance and support. What is the projection? What do you see, Doc, how this thing would impact prisons more or less than it did previously when COVID first hit?
Well, first, Roaches, we have to be aware of the possibility of that. That's the first thing, is that we have to be aware that given the conditions in the prison with overcrowding, people all together, and also knowing who the prison guards are and where they come from, that, you know, you realize that these guards in these places that we are in these counties, which are often these red counties, where those folks are being encouraged not to get vaccinated. That puts people who are putting us at risk right there in the prisons with us. So we have to be concerned. The answer to your question is, though, we don't know yet, and we don't have the data or the information as to how to predict what's going to happen, which is what I think this show is all about today. In the sense that, Roach, what I think we're going to have to do now is to have the appropriate people, and I'm going to work with you offline, to get the right people who can demand the data for how many people are testing positive in the prisons, and how many people are needing to be hospitalized inside of incarceration. So the answer is we don't know yet how bad this will be. And what I worry, though, is we don't have the mechanism, and this is what we learned last time, we don't have the mechanism to actually track it well with data. And so we're going to have to find a way to really put a message into the officials at the federal and state level that says we need to track it and find out. But the last thing I would say, though, Roach, is the real fight we have to go forward as we prepare to make sure that it doesn't become a problem is we're going to have to make sure that when the new vaccines come out, which will be coming out later this summer, the vaccines that will be coming out, we need to make sure that those are available to the folks in the prison. And I do not expect, based on past experience, that prison officials will be, pushing hard for those vaccines and those vaccinations. The people that are going to have to push hard for it are going to have to be, and this is what we learned in our national town hall, Roach and Mertine, you remember last year, where we're going to have Mama, who has been of the incarcerated person, calling in to their children and saying, no matter how old you are, we're still kids when it comes to Mama. And so we're going to have Mama call in and say, hey, look here, you find a way to get yourself vaccinated and protect yourself, even if those folks who are running the prison aren't letting you know that you should do it.
You know, you said something that's powerful. Mothers have a key role, a crucial role in this situation with this new COVID is coming down the pipe. As we know, men are afraid or reluctant to go to see the doctor or whatever, but the mothers, wives, and girlfriends, this is crucial for you that you can encourage your loved ones who are incarcerated that please go after this COVID, because I know quite a few people who passed on during this last COVID thing. And right now, we don't want to go in. We're going to die anyway, all of us. But the bottom line, don't rush it. And if you can do anything to prevent it or delay it, and mothers and women are key in making this happen. What would you suggest, Doc, to those people who are listening, who are in themselves or in jails or detention centers, not only in America, folks are listening to our show now around the world. We get calls from all from different continents. So, and this thing is affecting everybody. So what would you have to say, Doc, to those men and family members to keep them safe, or what they can do to prevent them catching this? Because I understand it has a new name. Is K2?
We've now got, so the variants that we have, we use a new kind of terminology, and it's called FLIRT, F-L-I-R-T, FLIRT. And all that is a way of describing now three variants that are kind of very similar together. They have the same kind of chemical structure. But the ones, just so everybody will have it in their notes, and so when you hear it in the news, I don't want you to be surprised. The two main variants under the sort of FLIRT name are KP3 and KP2. KP3 and KP2, they now account for more than half of all the new COVID infections in the United States. And what would I suggest you do? Here's my list. Number one, first and foremost, is when the new vaccines, which just got approved late last week. So we now have had all the scientific bodies have met. They have approved the new COVID vaccine. Those will be available later in the summer. When they are available, get it. Absolutely get it. And especially, I am saying, if you are in these in congregated facilities where you're locked together, close to close, if you have a chronic illness, if you are an elderly person, get the vaccine. Number two, we're seeing the symptoms of this disease now being very different than in the past. People are coming down with COVID now are not just having fever and runny nose and cough and so forth. What we're seeing is sometimes just nausea and diarrhea. So GI symptoms are sometimes the way it's presented. So if you are ill, if you are not feeling well at all, I want you to then go to the store and get you an over-the-counter COVID test. They still work. You need to be tested when you are starting to feel sick and make sure that you're not COVID positive. If you are sick, You know, don't go around other people. We don't need heroes and sheroes who feel like, well, you know, I'm sick, but I'm a soldier on. I'm going to take my sick body with all my virus and germs and stick them on everybody else to show you how strong and powerful I am. So if you are sick, stay the hell away from other people until you feel better. we don't need no heroes heroes showing off that they're superpowers and then make everybody around them sick and the whole daggone plant got to go home. So do me a favor. If you're sick, stay home until you're well. And then, like I said, get tested. If you're COVID positive, then you might want to check in with your doc, particularly if you have other worrisome illnesses. And then when you feel better, you can go back out. Those would be the main things that I would sort of focus on.
We have joining us, we have distinguished co-host, none other than the world traveler, Nkechi Taifa. Good morning, Nkechi.
Good morning. How are you? How is everyone? Two questions for Dr. Tuckson. Are you saying that the old COVID, the over-the-counter tests that we have that says that they're expired, we still have them, you know, in the closet and all, they do still work?
You know, within reason, yeah, I wouldn't throw them out. I would use it. And if you use it and it sort of says expired and you get a negative test, you know, take another test the next day just to make sure you're not in the wrong part of the cycle. But if you are, if you're still sick and worried, then you may have to go out and get a new batch. But I wouldn't throw out the old batch, Nkechi. I would go ahead and keep it. They work pretty well. Go for it. But the main thing is use them up. But by the way, when you next time you go to the pharmacy, grab a couple of the new ones that are there. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish. But at the end of the day, folks, I cannot emphasize, and I have no economic interest in any of the test kit companies. But look here, this disease presents now in such non-specific, strange symptoms. Get the doggone test and make sure you don't have COVID.
Another question. I know people who are suffering from long COVID from before, and I wanted you to talk about the long COVID as well as long COVID inside the prisons system, because, you know, at one time, COVID was a good way for people to be able to be released on compassionate release or home release and the like. But do you know how that deals with people inside who have long COVID? And yeah.
I don't want to be too long-winded on this answer. Let me just remind everyone that the challenge with COVID is that this virus attacks a great number of parts of our bodies. It has a very unpredictable way of latching onto multiple parts of the human body. And so what we're getting is a wide variety of consequences. And those consequences can be very different individual to individual. The long COVID syndrome is one that is real. And that it is one that science is trying to get a better understanding of how we can categorize it and how we can then therefore treat it. But when you have multiple kinds of ways in which this disease presents, it means that you have to have a healthcare system that's prepared to deal with each individual in terms of how they as individuals present. Each of our immune systems are very different in terms of how strong they are or how weak they are or in what areas they're strong and what areas they're weak. So, Nkechi, what I'm trying to get to here and being very specific is because this long COVID is unpredictable and very individual, it means that when a person has it and is ill, they require individual personal medical intervention. We have to demand, therefore, that anyone in the prison system who has long COVID should have a regular source of care, someone who should be monitoring their disease and adjusting the treatment and the intervention to them as individuals. And if the prison system does not have the capacity in-house to manage them, then they need to be referred to a specialist outside of the institution to deal with their particular issue. So again, no one size fits. There is no such thing as long COVID. All right, you know what you got and that's it. You know, like heart disease. I know you got heart disease. We know what that is. You know, we know what hypertension is. It's a specific disease. Long COVID can present to a problem in the lung. It can present a problem in your blood vessels. Wow. It can present a problem in your kidneys. So we need to manage it specifically, and we got to demand that people get the care they need.
Now, Dr. Tuckson, you said at the beginning of the program that many people, especially the workers, are being discouraged from getting vaccinated. What is that?
Well, you know how it is in America, where we've got our red states and our red counties, and we have whatever. And so the politicians in these red counties all across America have been, you know, yelling at their people, don't worry about it. Don't get vaccinated. Get ivermectin, you know, all this stupid stuff. Take a horse tranquilizer, whatever. You know, they got all these, you know, drink bleach. That's what the president back then, that Trump guy, says. So my point is that in those communities, the white community stopped being vaccinated in large numbers. And that's the reason why Black life expectancy the second year in the pandemic was better. You hear me? Better than white America. Because we were coming from way in the back, Martine, in terms of people were distrustful because of the past experience with Tuskegee, all the reasons why we didn't trust. And then we didn't get access to the vaccines as quickly as white America did. We were on the back burner. When we finally got it, and we finally got through all the noise and confusion, we started getting vaccinated at very high rates. The white community stagnated because of people like Trump and the governor of Texas, and so forth and so on. They stagnated. So what I'm saying is those prison guards, I have a feeling, you know, again, a lot of them and so many of them are right wing Republican people, MAGA people. Those MAGA people were not getting vaccinated. So what you're doing is implanting into the prison culture mediums who are unvaccinated culture mediums into this environment where our people can control it. And they were definitely not on any campaign, you know, Martine, begging our folks to get vaccinated in the prisons. They weren't doing it. So if we don't do it ourselves, them brothers and sisters in the jails aren't going to get the message. And probably the only message they're going to get is from the nut jobs who keep saying, hey, get the vaccine, you're going to grow a fourth ear. You know, and that's the message that we get.
You know, Doc, you know, last week, Doc, on the show, we did a story on Grapevine about a prison in Hagerstown. And the Black guards filed a suit against the white guards because the white guards was calling the Black staff the N-word, mistreating them. And this is the guards treating other guards like this. You wonder what happens to the inmates that inside. And with the racism factor, in most prisons, as you identify, most prisons are in rural, isolated counties and in rural states. And the racism is traumatic. So we always get the short end of the stick. But now, because of this new COVID is coming out, or this COVID variant is coming out, it makes me wonder what the status is of those men and women who are incarcerated in these racist facilities when they just file a class action suit against the guards, the Black guards that they file against the white guards. They didn't say nothing about the inmates. If they're mistreating the guards, what do you think is happening now? I mean, with this COVID, this new variant coming down the pike, we are concerned that this thing is going to spread a lot faster and quicker because there's internal fighting or politicking inside the institution amongst the white staff and the Black staff. And the inmate population are subject to receive all this negativity that's coming down and probably risk losing their lives.
In addition to which, of course, we have to make sure, again, that we're prepared if, in fact, and I want to be, again, emphasizing, if, in fact, the new variants are going to be causing sickness at the rates that we had before, we're going to need to make sure we're prepared with protective equipment in the jails, you know, all the things, the Paxlovid, which to treat the disease once it occurs. Remember, we talked about that last time, that drug Paxlovid, so that when you get COVID, that you can diminish the symptoms by taking this other drug. So my point to you is that we don't know yet whether or not these new variants are going to, you know, how sick they're going to make us. We don't know how they're going to spread. We don't know how bad it's going to be. But I know one thing, hope is not a plan. So, you know, you can hope. But the last time we learned that when you needed to mobilize, you got to mobilize quick. You can't just suddenly just imagine that there are going to be the masks available or the drugs we need available. You got to prepare for that. So what I'm saying to you is, it is too soon to say there's going to be an absolute catastrophe. We know there's going to be spread. We know people are going to get sick from this. I mean, that's just inevitable. Whether it's going to be from the flu. You remember that, and let me just make sure we're all clear on this. When the main season for COVID occurs, it is also occurs with flu and with the other virus, RSV. And that's just a fancy way of saying the respiratory syncytial virus. Just call it RSV. RSV and flu and COVID are all come together in the wintertime. COVID, now remember I said COVID doesn't have a season. It just hangs around all the time. But when you bring COVID in and then you get your flu and RSV, it's hard to know what you've got, but you're going to have something. So we're going to have a lot of people getting something, one of the three of those. And so you want to be clear that you're prepared. So Roach, what I'm getting at here is, let's make sure that we advocate that the prisons are prepared to deal with the consequences of those three viruses coming together at the same time. And that'll start probably somewhere around September, October.
Doc, are there any legal restrictions requiring people to self-isolate like we did when COVID first hit? When this new variant comes down, do you have to isolate and be restricted in terms of where you can go, stay away from people, stay home by yourself? Will these restrictions be reimposed on this new variant?
Things will be different than last time. And let me just, as I answer your question specifically, just say this to the audience, because this is very important. We in healthcare don't always know all of the answers. We have to learn. We have to study. We have to put guidance out there and recommendations the best we can. Then new information comes, and then you modify and you change the more you know. There was nobody that could predict everything about the COVID virus the last time around. So we had to make the best decisions we could make with what we had available. The answer to your question is, we will not see those restrictions this time. What the restrictions, because we've learned that it probably is not going to be a useful intervention to demand it. What we're going to say this time, and based on all the science from studying the last time, is that we will not have mandatory isolation, but that you should self-decide to stay home till you feel better. And once you feel better, you may go back out. Once the symptoms are gone, you may return to the world. But that's on you. But we will not have the same demand and forced isolation that we had the last time. So we learned, and now we'll do it this way, and let's see what happens. But again, it comes back, though, Roach, to the individual responsibility. If you are sick, stay away from everybody else.
Okay. This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, 89.3 FM. We are not taking any callers today because studio is going through a thing. We got to have some new equipment coming in. So we thank you for tuning in, for appreciating our show. This is WPFW-FM, your station for jazz and justice. Our guest right now is Dr. Reed Tuckson, and we're talking about this COVID uptick that is coming.
Okay, Doc, and thank you. That was my wife, y'all, in case you know that. I like the way she talked. Doc, you mentioned that the symptoms are so wide and broad for this new COVID variant. I'm sitting here talking now, I got a running nose. My nose has been running for the past week. I don't know if I got COVID or not. And you're saying it could be respiratory, it could be chills, it could be everything. And it attacks every organ in your body. How do you know if you got it when the symptoms are so broad and diverse?
So I would say that first of all, I would doubt that, you know, just having a runny nose in the allergy season, living in Washington D.C. which is one of the great benefits of D.C. is all in flowers. One of the disadvantages of DC is all them flowers. So, you're going to have a runny nose, but that kind of mild thing, I doubt that would be COVID, but you really don't know now. And that's the point of it, Roach. And that's why I would say that if you're feeling significantly ill, and you kind of know when you kind of got like the flu, or something like that, it's kind of, there's a little, the difference, between like, hey man, this ain't a runny nose, I'm sick. When you say, when you get that little signal in the back of your mind that goes, you know what, I'm sick, then you go get tested and you go over to this and you pull out of your cabinet your COVID test kit and you use that. And so that's what I would say, that's what you should do. And then if that test is negative and you're still sick 2 days later, test again, because your first test may have been too soon when your viral titers, you know, aren't enough for it to be detected. So if you're still sick after 2 days, test again. If that's still negative, you probably don't have COVID. You have something else. And if you are someone with a pre-existing condition that causes you to be concerned about anything you get, then you might want to check in with your doc.
Go ahead, Nikichi, you want to jump in, Nikichi? Go ahead, Nikichi.
I was just saying, I'm just listening. I have noticed more and more people wearing masks now, though for some strange reason, when I'm in an airplane, I seem to be the only one with a mask on. I'm not quite sure the reason why that is. So, yeah, can you speak to that? Yeah. You know, travel, planes, and seriously speaking, people are not wearing masks there. They're wearing masks in my dance class, but they're not wearing masks on planes. So I don't understand.
This question, let me just really take our time and unpack this very important question. And let's start with number one. There was mischief made during the end of the last pandemic when people were trying to say that masks didn't work. Masks do work. What the study that some people quote, and if you see it online or you see it in you know these with these blogs and so forth, what the studies have taught us is that mask wearing did not have an overwhelming impact on decreasing the spread of COVID to the entire population. It didn't have a tremendous effect on decreasing COVID in the entire population. Now, why was that? Because most people didn't wear them, either people didn't wear their masks, even though they were supposed to, or they didn't wear it properly. You know, people wearing it halfway, you know, and so forth, wearing it sometimes. What the studies did show is that it does protect you, that the masks do help protect you. It protects you from giving it to someone else and someone else giving it to you. So two different things there. Second point, Nikichi, therefore, each of us is going to have to make a risk decision about how much risk are we willing to take. And no one can really guide you, Nikichi, on that. I would say this, the easiest risk calculation for whether you wear a mask or not is for people who have a chronic illness, debilitating illness, or the very elderly. If you are those people or you are around those people, knowing now that the virus is starting to come back again and move up, then you would probably want to wear a mask. Those that where the risk is much greater. For you, if you are a healthy person doing well out here, your risk profile may well lead you to calculate that you don't need to be wearing a mask at this point in time. And I'm not sure that I would advise or say that I'm urging everyone to wear their masks now. If you're in one of those high risk categories, being careful. If I'm around someone in a high risk category, be careful. But for the most of us right now, probably not called upon unless you just feel better in terms of your peace of mind and your general level of comfort. And listen, no harm in wearing them. As far as on the airplane. Right. Nikichi, the one thing we do feel confident about is that the air control systems on the airplanes are very good. They are really filtering and blowing that air. Now, if you are somebody that closes those vents off and everybody closes them off, you know, which sometimes we do because we get cold, that might diminish the effectiveness where you are in terms of that. But the airplane system is pretty good. And you, unless your risk profile, your peace of mind, your comfort says, I'm going to wear it anywhere on the plane, you may not have to do that on the airplane. So I'll conclude this answer, which was long, but I wanted it to be complete. Most of where we are now on wearing masks, they do work. Don't ever let anybody tell you that they don't. They just didn't work to control it for the entire population. But on an individual by individual basis, they do work. However, right now, not a full-blown crisis. Up to you with your risk profile. easier if you're somebody that's ill. That's a pretty easy calculus to make.
That was helpful. Thank you so much.
Hey, Doc, go ahead. You want to?
And exactly why is it coming back?
Well, the reason is that the COVID virus is a devilish, evil little virus. And it works overtime to get smarter and smarter about how to kill people. And that's its job. The only job it has is to kill people and to survive. And so its job is to survive, and then its survival kills people. So that's all its job is. So it never went away. So my point is that because we never could eradicate it by bombing, you know, like we didn't carpet bomb the doggone thing right from the beginning, given all the other nonsense that occurred a couple of years ago. So we just let this thing hang around. Now it is there. It never went away. So it's coming back in a sense of saying that it has evolved to, you know, it just keeps changing and changing, and it competes with itself. So what happens is that the virus competes with other forms of the virus, and they kill each other off until the dominant one wins. And then that becomes the one that gets the food and the sustenance and the nurturing, and then it starts to grow. The other reason, Martine, that it's sort of increasing again is because of this heat wave. That has really made a big difference. We are now running inside, and we're all up under each other. We're not outside playing in the fields anymore and having fun. We're inside because it's too damn hot. We're around each other, congregating. So because of the combination of those things, that's why we're starting to see it starting to come back in a vengeance. But it never went away.
You know, Doctor, at the height of the pandemic, it said 500,000 people, 500,000 folks died from COVID. Now we're looking at 30,000.
No, it's a big drop. Let me just say the number of people that died from COVID were over 1 million.
1 million, okay.
No, man, 1.2 million. And let's be clear. 1.2 million Americans, this is just in America, died from this disease, bro. And here's what the number y'all really need to know. And that is, it is now with reasonably really good estimates that at least minimum 300,000 of them didn't need to die.
Oh, wow.
See, that's the thing. Yeah. So that's why when these people, and I appreciate everybody, and you know, we've had, it's too bad we won't be able to take the calls today, which I'll do anytime. And I appreciate the calls from your audience, Roach and Martine, because, and Nikichi, because they're smart, they're intelligent. But a lot of times we will get people on these calls who will make these outlandish kinds of statements, you know, and that's okay, you know, if you're just having a debate. You know, if I'm having a debate with you, Roach, about something we disagree about in a philosophical position, you know, that's all good. But if death is a consequence of our conversation, that ain't funny anymore, you know. And so you got people who are spouting off about all kind of stuff as if death was not the consequence. 300,000 at least people shouldn't have died from this doggone pandemic if our country had done what it was supposed to do. And so I just want to make sure that we're all aware. You can't say Black Lives Matter if they don't matter to us first.
You can't just go
popping off about any old thing and say, oh, I think I'm going to gamble. So I'm going to give some people some advice. I don't know nothing about what I'm talking about, but I'm going to give Black people some advice. And not worry about whether they live or die, because I don't really, really, really believe that Black lives really matter. My opinion is more important than whether Black lives matter. We can't handle it.
And you're saying a lot of people die because of what that T guy was saying about, oh, it's not real, and define what the scientists were saying.
And don't take the vaccine. And by the way, them people that say don't take the vaccine or run out there and got these new Ozempic drugs and you know, nobody, they don't know. I mean, you know, all these new drugs.
That was a good one, me. That was a good one.
They got some brothers out here now. The same brothers that was talking about the COVID vaccine was going to give you a fourth eye. They take Ozempic and testosterone pills so they lose weight and build up their muscle. They think that's going to be something good. Now, you know, who in the world? You are scared of the vaccine to save your life, but you're going to go run out here. Oh, by the way, I'm going to take me some Ozempic and some testosterone so I can build up my muscles and be. Come on. Really? I mean, the things that we do with our life, the choices we make no sense.
We call that jiggy boogie. It's a lot of jiggy boogie going on, and that's just more jiggy boogie, Doc.
Yes.
Question. What are you, you co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. What is the Black Coalition of COVID-19 doing to get in front of this new surge of COVID-19 coming down?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we're pleased to have cousins like y'all that invite us on shows. We're organizing, and you'll be excited to know this now, but particularly our focusing now is on East of the River, because, you know, they get the less of everything. And they get the less resources and the most disease. And so we have pulled together with the leadership of the Anacostia Coordinating Council. the Martha's Table, Ward 8 Health Council, Ambrose Lane and his organization. Those leaders have come together with us, and we are now pulling together all of the community-based health and faith-based organizations east of the river into one mighty army. That's all working together with the health department. Yeah. We've invited the new health commissioner, Dr. Bennett, who I've got a lot of hopes for. Dr. Bennett, our new health commissioner, and she has been very receptive, Roach and Martine and Nikichi, to partnering with the community and getting down to the grassroots level where the people are. So we're bringing all of them together, and now we'll be well prepared if this thing jumps off with the same ferocity that it was last time. Our community organizations are united so that some organizations may be perfect for places to go for testing, some for vaccine administration, some if we have to isolate because people are sick, how do you get food supplies? How do you get in-home care support? Calvin Rolark was a great, great, great man, the head of the Washington Informer, you know, and he said, and he taught me this when I was the health commissioner in D.C., he said, no people but a people can save a people. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. No people but a people can save a people. Yeah. So what we're organizing on East of the River to make sure that our community itself can save itself. And that's what I'm really excited about. So if you all, I would just beg everyone in the listening audience, whatever, you know, your spare time is, please make sure you're donating and volunteering with your community-based, faith-based organizations. Everybody can't just be a free rider out here running by themselves. Hook up with other people. Put your shoulder to the wheel so we can solve not only, Roach, the concern about COVID, but look, we got too much heart disease, too much cancer, too much chemical dependency. All them things have been there. We got to fight those. So what we're doing at the Black Coalition Against COVID is organizing the community itself and help the community fight for its own survival. No people but a people can save a people.
You know, I was impressed. I was invited to that meeting you talked about with Dr. Bennett and the health folk over there in Southeast.
Talk about it.
And I was impressed with seeing this many community nonprofit organizations coming together to see what they can do to channel their resources to attack this problem. And you said it right. We got other problems just as big as COVID. It's like COVID, heartburn, cancer, all this. It's like fighting Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, and Joe Frazier every day of your life. You can't keep fighting these jokers every day.
Not so by yourself.
We're fighting heavyweight battles every day.
Yeah.
But one aspect, if it ain't medical, it's poverty. If it's economic, it's whatever. And I said it as a joke, but I can't fight like that. I can't fight Mike Tyson once. You're talking about fighting him every day? Then you throw Muhammad Ali in the ring?
We can't fight it by ourselves. That's why we got a collective work and responsibility. The Nguzu Saba, those of you all that come out of that political movement, you know, the Nguzu, the Ron Karinga and all of that. When we celebrate Kwanzaa, you know, Kwanzaa, man, you know, we celebrated like for like a day or two in Christmas time. You know, collective work and responsibility is one of the pillars of Kwanzaa. You got it. So you got to take that, man. And we individually, we cannot win. Together, we can win.
There you go.
So let's remember that. So join your organizations, folks, and fight together. And by the way, I think it is important that your constituency, the people that listen to this show, know that you showed up personally and were invited by me personally to make sure that when we talk about the health of our community, that returning and incarcerated citizens are right there, standing right there with everybody else, that you are as important, if not more important than every other constituency right there. And Roach, I just want to thank you for showing up and for being the kind of advocate that we need.
Well, that's okay. The warden told me to do it, Doc. So I'm just following the warden's advice.
Martine, don't let him talk about you like that.
You want to give me any closing comments, Doc? Because I know this other, what you're doing in Atlanta, you right now, you're calling in from Atlanta. And there's other cities where we had a black population that's going through the same thing, some worse than what we're doing in east of the river and southeast. Are you getting a support from other organizations around the country and other cities, man, to attack, try to get in front of this COVID-19?
We are lucky enough, Roach, that we, you know, the Black Coalition Against COVID arose out of D.C., but then became national, and that we brought together the four Black medical schools, Howard University, Morehouse in Atlanta, Meharry in Nashville, Tennessee, and Charles Drew in Los Angeles, where I used to be the president of the Charles Drew University in L.A. We brought all those together, along with the National Medical Association, the National Black Nurses Association, and blackdoctor.org. We brought all of them together, and now that allowed us to work nationally. And then we also partnered with the Black faith-based initiative, Choose Healthy Life. And they're in about 30 states. And this is Black clergy partnering with Black healthcare professionals. So we are doing that. My final words, I guess, Roach, would be the simple things, but number one, the most important, and it would seem to be obvious, but it is not. And that is, you have to have every one of us have an undying love for Black people. That it's got to matter whether we live or die. And anything that distracts us from whether or not we live or die, we need to reject. Like any stupid, if I see another doggone article about Kendrick Lamar and Drake having a beef, the Supreme Court just overturned every damn thing there is, made us have a king for life who can do whatever he wants. They're rolling back every diversity, equity, and inclusion thing everywhere in America. Everything that could go wrong for us is going wrong. And we got people thinking and worrying every day about whether Drake and Kendrick Lamar are having a beef. We have got to be more serious. If Black lives matter, they got to matter to us first. Second thing is, we have got to stop falling prey to those who deliberately send information into our community, deliberately trying to get us to not do what we want to do. As I close out, I just remind you about Tuskegee. How many people are going to call up about, we don't want to take the vaccine because of Tuskegee? The whole point of Tuskegee, the whole reason why that.
The whole reason when it froze.
Drug that would save their life. How are you going to go protest Tuskegee and say, hey, I'm not going to take the vaccine that would save my life. I'll show them. It doesn't make any sense. We get all caught up in nonsense as opposed to survival. This is about life or death. So I would just say, folks, it matters. Take life or death seriously, not just your own. Take the life of another person of color who is vulnerable. And when you look and go around them, know that if you can give something to somebody else that could kill them, you got to stop and say, morally, what's my obligation and responsibility? Yes, so that's my question. If we don't love life and we don't respect Black life, all the recommendations, all the guidance, taking the vaccine, being tested, none of it matters. Because if we don't care whether we live or die, there's no fight. That's my last message.
Oh, you got any? We want to thank you, Dr. Reed Tuckers, for joining us, the co-founder of Black Coalition Against COVID-19. Former commissioner of public health at DC, and he's been on boards, committees, medical programs all over the world. We want to thank you for taking your time, Doc, for spending with us to educate our audience on this COVID. And for those men and women that are listening from institutions and you got family and loved ones, mothers, wives, and grandmothers, you can play a key role in getting your loved one. Doc, one question before we go. Is there a fact sheet that your organization, COVID, Blacks Against COVID-19, can produce, that we can disseminate or send to institutions what men and women can do, and juveniles, kids can do, with this new advent of COVID-19 coming and sweeping across the country. Because
we will work on one and get it to you, and we'll send it along. So I'll take care of that. Good for you.
And I'll call you as soon as a warden let me off my off the microphone.
hey, Roach, my last word to you, brother. Merry Christmas.
Hey. Well, Doc, tell it to the hat. You got to tell it to the hat. Okay, thank you,
man. Okay.
Bye-bye. I guess it's been Dr. Reed Tuxton, and our co-hosts have been Nikisha and my wife, Mertine. Thank you, Dr. Tuxton. You'll be bringing you back, because this COVID-19 is on the rise, folks. And of course, you know who will get the most of it is us. So let's stop the juggy boogie and do what we can to help each other out. This has been Crossroads, brought to you by Mertine and Roach Brown. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you the next hour. We do a two-hour show live from the Chili Bowl. Our next guest will be Mr. Herbert Robinson of the Georgetown University Pivot Program. Thank you, thank you. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
I gotta say, I won't change. You're the reason workers from...
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture.
On the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
Right here on WPFW 89.3 FM. That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
Born in 1899, Edward Kennedy Ellington ranks as the greatest all-around figure, composer, arranger, orchestrator, bandleader, conductor, piano accompanist, soloist, and musical thinker. On Thursday, July 11th, from 5 a.m. until midnight, WPFW honors Ellington on the occasion of his 125th birth year with Ellington 125, a celebration beyond category. We will tickle the sonic keys with all things Ellington, from his three-minute instrumentals to his theatrical scores and sacred concerts, all in support of building our relocation fund. That's Ellington 125, a celebration beyond category. Thursday, July 11th, from 5 a.m. until midnight on WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Robin Holden. On Sunday, July 7th, from 4 until 8 p.m., WPFW is presenting a fundraising evening of roots, rock, reggae at Mango Cafe, 4719 Annapolis Road in Blaytonsburg, Maryland, featuring Proverbs Reggae Band with Z Lion and special guests Freedom and Saroma Lee L. Proceeds to benefit WPFW. Details, WPFWFM.org.
This is attorney Nikisha Taifa, and I am thrilled to host a new talk show entitled Human Rights and Justice. Join me every Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m., starting September, as I feature insightful commentary and stimulating guests discussing domestic and global themes encompassing political, economic, and social rights. Get up and stand up with me, Nikisha Taifa, Wednesdays, 5 p.m., for Human Rights and Justice.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the Community Town Hall, The Harm of Crime Bills, and the Future of Community Power in Chaka City. On Saturday, July 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. Crime Bill targets the Black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City, Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the RISE Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information and registration can be found online, PACA, that's P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Sophie's Parlor is the original women's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at